for those our members as well as our folks in the audience, we do have one House Bill 2813 we are not going to hear today, and we will look to reconsider that sometime in the near future. And so I'm actually then going to just reverse our agenda from what you see here. We'll start out first. First up is the House Bill 3304. On deck, House Bill 2378, and in the hole will be 2825. And that concludes my baseball lingo for the day.
Well, who's leadoff and who's cleanup?
So let's open up a public hearing on House Bill 3304. And Representative Flores,
yes,
you want to
take the floor? Thank you.
Do you not have 33?
Oh, my God. You have 32.
Here. Okay. We'll share.
Yeah, thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Linda Flores. I'm state representative for House District 51. I am the chief sponsor for House Bill 3304 at the request of Eugene Schoenheit. This bill is an attempt to help facilitate some of the what have been apparent difficulties in some of the elections processes, and would require that the county clerks provide abstract information upon the death of a registered voter to the county, providing name, age, date of birth, and so that particular voter would be disconnected from the voter rolls. And I would then like to introduce Eugene Schoenheit, who would like to address the concerns, and you should have dash one amendments in front of you, which does insert date of birth as one of the indicia of the voter. As I understood that some of the concern, Eugene, you would give that to Annetta, please. Thank you. And some of the concern that in the event, as the bill was originally prepared, there would be two John Smiths, for instance, and they might have the same age or other information that's pertained on an abstract of death, that to indicate date of birth would somehow identify that and localize that to the particular John Smith in question. So with that, I will introduce Eugene Schoenheit, and he can give you the rest of the story. Okay.
Well, I wrote this bill, or I should say I wrote it.
Can get you just to introduce yourself.
Eugene Schoenheit. I live in Clackamas County. Any more?
No, that's it.
Okay. Well, I wrote a rough draft, gave it to Linda. Linda sent it to legal counsel, and basically got a bill here. I'd like to start out by saying I'd like to dedicate this bill to Marie Hester. She has, she's a lady on here, and couple reasons. She was, my mother-in-law just died recently, and as a result, we learned a few things and ended up finding a problem in election law. So what the problem amounts to is that the county register processes the death certificates. They pile them up on their desk for about a week. Then they send them to the state health department. They pile them up till the end of the month. Then they send them to the Secretary of State. And the whole problem, where it begins to become a problem, is that it takes up to 2 months to get this through. I have heard people say that it takes longer, but I have pretty much confirmed that Marie took 1 month and 17 days, and I've heard variations from that, so I figure it's about up to 2 months. But really what happens is we're dealing with vote by mail, and we get extra ballots. They're being mailed out to people who say are dead and can't vote. And that's primarily the problem. So what this bill does is It just simply takes the long way around and shortens it up by saying, okay, here at the county clerk level or the county register, we'll just make up another death certificate and send it over to the election department. Have the election department send it over to the Secretary of State and have it go statewide. And in the process, you cut it down, the delay time. This bill cuts it down to 2 days for local. And, oh, I'd say it shows 48 hours, but I'd say, you know, less than a week statewide. And as a result, people, you know, won't be getting extra ballots. Caretakers, who might be tempted to sign ballots, you know, won't be tempted because they won't get it. There's a couple additional benefits that are not really in the paperwork on this. This will help cut some expenses because, you know, you don't have to send out as many ballots and postage to send out the extra ballots. You know, that'll help cut that process down. I already talked about, you know, possibility of election fraud. This can be adapted if the Secretary of State's pushing a statewide voter registration office. If that comes about, this will fit right in and there'll be no problem there. And the last thing that's, I think, is really important from the personal side. You have a family member who has just died. You know, you do really want to have them receive a ballot to vote, you know, when you're feeling bad about this.
Okay.
And that pretty much covers it.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if you don't know the answer, just say that. I'm wondering if you have an idea of how many people die in Oregon in a given month when there's nothing big going on.
No, I don't.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, I mean this in no disrespect for this bill, but there are states that have been voting deceased people for a long time. I think they would be very sad to hear about such an efficient process.
Chair, Representative Berger, you know, we don't want to disenfranchise anyone, but there does come a point.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Representative Flores, you can come on back on the dais. Jesse Lott.
Jesse Lott from Clackamas County. I just wanted to say that I agree with this bill, 3304. And when I ran for Senate, there was an unbelievable amount of deaths in Clackamas County, evidently. But a lot of the people were getting ballots after they had passed away. You think about in Oregon, George Bush lost by one vote per precinct. I'm not saying that everybody votes deceased, but if you've got one death in each precinct that gets a ballot, that's a lot of ballots out there. And I'm not sure that some of these people are not voting. And I'd like to see a centralized voting system set up in the state anyway. But that's all I have to say.
Great. Thank you. Any questions? Great. Thank you. And no others are scheduled to testify. I assume the clerks don't have a need to testify on this one. So we will close the public hearing. And we will open up a work session on House Bill 3304. Representative Flores?
Mr. Chair, I would move the adoption of the Dash 1 amendments.
Representative Flores moves adoption of the Dash 1 amendments. Any discussion?
Yes.
Representative Moss Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have enough information to vote yes on this, only because I need to hear from the clerk's office, county register's office, to see what the cost would be to implement, if they even have a way of getting the information in a timely manner to DHS. I'd like to know the number of deaths per day. I worked in the Clackamas County Health Department, and they processed the death certificates, and they were coming in all the time, and it took one person did the vital statistics, that's birth records and death records. And so I would like to have someone from the agency give me a little bit more clue as to the, I'd like to know the fiscal impact.
And maybe our committee administrator might address.
Mr. Chair, Representative Monis Anderson, committee, we have a no fiscal impact from our fiscal office on this bill, so Ms. Newingham is here. I imagine she can provide some insight on your questions.
Thank you. Hopefully so. Annette Newingham from Lane County Elections, representing the Association of County Clerks, and Mr. Chair and members of the committee. The impact is really minimal for the clerks. We already process any death certificates that come to us, and we get them beyond even the state. Like in Lane County, for instance, I get them from my local vital records, and I also receive them from the obituaries. We process them even more timely than you know, we take care of those issues. I also would like to address that even if there is a ballot that does go out, we have to match the signature, and if someone is deceased, it's unlikely that a signature would match and we would count the ballot. But we certainly feel that it is in the best interest not to send out a ballot for someone who is deceased, and we would certainly act upon that information. So the fiscal impact for us is minimal. I do believe there would be a fiscal impact realized by the actual Health Vital Records Department, and you should try to get information there, and I'm sorry I can't answer that. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. We're still then at the motion to adopt the Dash 1 amendments. Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Flores.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3304 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation.
Representative Flores has moved House Bill 3304 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Just because the county clerk wasn't able to address the impact on vital statistics in each county, I would like a no until I can find out or get more information on the amount of money that it would cost to get this information to the right place quickly.
Okay. Representative Barnhart.
Mr. Chair, thank you. You know, I make the opposite assumption, and sometimes at my peril, that people who don't come to talk about a bill are happy with it.
Okay.
And so I intend to vote for it.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else? Let's call the roll.
President Backlund.
Aye.
President Barnhart.
Aye.
President Close.
Aye.
President Flores.
Aye.
President Bonas Anderson.
No.
Aye. Chair votes aye, and we will have Representative Flores carry this bill. And close the work session on House Bill 3304, and we will open a work session on House Bill 2378. And,
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you heard this bill in February.
Oh, no.
It's quite some time ago. There are no amendments to the bill. There's no fiscal and no revenue impact. This is just puts in statute what was understood to be the case anyway, which is reimbursing the county clerks for the cost of a special election. So this just codifies in statute the agreement that everyone thought we had already.
So can Carol entertain a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2378 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Close has moved House Bill 2378 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, let's call the roll.
President Backlund.
Aye.
President Barnhart.
Aye.
President Smith.
Hold time.
President Flores.
Excused.
President Lawrence Anderson.
Aye.
Aye. Chair votes aye, and we will have Representative Shetterly carry this bill. And that closes the work session on House Bill 2378, and we'll now open up a public hearing on House Bill 2825. And there's our proponent. Mr. Anderson, if you would come forward. just open up the public hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Bruce Anderson, and I serve as the legislative director to House Speaker Karen Minnis. And I'm here to speak in favor of House Bill 2825. House Bill 2825 addresses two main issues: controlling the spiraling costs of elections in this day and age of vote by mail, and providing clarification as to when polls close. With the advent of vote by mail and the lengthy period of time the ballots are out presently, the time for campaigning has been extended. Most ballots are mailed out around 3 weeks prior to the election, and campaigning, of course, must begin prior to that time. So our time frames have been extended way beyond what they used to be, thus causing more money to be expended on campaign literature, advertisements in newspapers, radio, and TV, and so forth. And the facts bear out this point. For example, if we look at the years 1998 and compare 1998 to 2000, we find some interesting numbers here. 1998 was the last year that we had a polling place election, and 2000 was our first all-vote-by-mail election. House races in 1998 averaged around $43,500. By 2000, nearly 2 years later, that figure jumped to $62,100. Total House expenditures on those races were $5.6 million in 98 versus $7.7 million in 2000, nearly 2 years later. Interesting point also to emphasize, or interesting point to bring up here, is the number of our House candidates actually dropped from 129 to 125 in that time frame as well. Senate races bear out a similar trend. Average race in the Senate was $77,098. That jumped to $118,000 in the year 2000. And again, we had a drop off in the number of candidates from 32 to 30. And total Senate expenditures went from $2.4 million in 98 to $3.5 million in 2000. And while I don't believe all of the costs are in, or I don't have the costs from the 2002 elections with me, I know it's safe to say that the costs continue to increase in last year's election. And the example I would bring up would be Senator Ringo's race against Representative Bill Witt. That race alone cost over $1 million. And you compare that with the total amount of expenditures that we had in 98, nearly 2 years ago, at 2.4. So, with all that people say about the increasing cost of the elections, the change contemplated by HB 2825 would help in controlling these costs. The other issue I want to speak to is the issue of poll closing times. In recent elections, we've seen, and there's been a great deal of, shall we say, flexibility as to when polls close. And the current language, I think, that's in statute right now, I think may have led us to some confusion about that. So, kind of leads you to the belief that there, or at least in this case, that there needs to be some set time limit as to when polls close and we stop accepting ballots. And, and HB 2825 in that regard tightens down the law here. It provides a definite poll closing time of 8 p.m. on election day. One other point, I just want to step back for one moment. We have three sets of ballots that go out right now. We have, I believe, what is referred to as long-term absentee electors, mainly our overseas or military ballots. The bill does nothing to change that. We are prohibited from federal law, and frankly, I don't think we would ever want to change that either. You would have two other but the other two sets are, one, the folks who don't receive mail service daily, and those that are outside of the state that are not long-term absent voters. Those ballots would drop under the bill, would drop from about, I think it's 29 days down to 20th day before the election. But the bulk of voters would have their ballots going out, according to the bill, in its present form 10 days before the election. That's still about 2 weeks, roughly. And I want to talk to that point and just get back to that one last point in just one moment. One issue I do want to speak to here, and that has to do with the potential for increasing costs to county elections department. because I'm sure there will be some people here that may raise that issue. I would dispute that notion because there are costs that are already being incurred right now in processing ballots and conducting elections. This bill would only provide that ballots would be out in a shortened period of time. Things are still going to have to be processed. Ballots will still have to be processed in either fashion. So I think it's just important to underscore that it's what we're talking about there. I think from the election processing standpoint is our signature verification that's going to have to take place, and ballot counting cannot take place until the polls close. Anyway, and one final thing that I would like to point out on this issue, and that is that voters are still going to have time to research the issues and research the candidates. This bill does nothing at all to the timelines when the voter pamphlet is sent out. So the voter's pamphlet will still be out. That will have absolutely no impact. I do not believe, in terms of people researching for themselves, the candidates and the issues that will be before them on the election ballot. With that, I would conclude. One thing I do would like to just point out here, and I think this is a mere drafting error when the bill was put together, and that would be that rather than the 10th day before the election, it would be better if we did change that to have it going out on the 11th day. That would accommodate ballots being able to be mailed during the course of the week, for the most part. Thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Questions? Representative Berger?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would you explain about deleting the provisions allowing the acceptance of ballots of people who are waiting in line? I mean, if the polls close at 8 o'clock and I've worked all day and it's the last day and I get there and I'm standing in line and the door is right behind me, you're not going to take my ballot? Is that what you're saying?
You know, I've talked quite a bit about the, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, I have thought a lot about that. I think at some point we've got to be able to tighten down the law in that regard. I think the current law as it's presently written is maybe a little bit confusing. We've seen past elections where, as I said previously, I think we've got a little flexibility in what that time, that poll closing meant. And I think the thing that I would say is that we've got to at some point say that the polls close at this time. And that's the change that would be contemplated. It would just be tightening down that law, part of the law.
Can you just expand on that a little bit? I mean, can you give us some examples? I mean, what you see has happened up till now, and how does this fix the concerns?
Mr. Chair, I believe that the issue that's contemplated there that I was aware of in prior elections had to do where's the end of the line? Is it inside the polling place? Is it outside the door? Is it down the street? Is it if you're standing, outside somewhere, or you just get there? Or at what point are we going to close down and stop accepting ballots? And because I think at some point we need to provide some clarity in law that says this is the absolute timeline.
So, if I just again, this is anecdotal, but I've heard of those situations where we have people that are standing in line. It's like 8 o'clock. They are in line. The clerk may not have received the ballot yet. In fact, the people don't even have their ballots completed yet. They're filling them out still as they're standing in line, but it's after 8 o'clock, and those ballots have been accepted. Is that your understanding, or in those situations?
Well, I think Mr. Chair,
we just need to clear up.
I think that's what we need to clear up. I think the law provides the leeway. I mean, I'm not a lawyer and don't pretend to be one, but as I read the law, it does allow, does have provisions for that when folks are going to be turning in their ballots. And I just would say to that there's a time frame now that we are under, in this day and age of vote by mail when you've got several days to be able to turn in your ballot. And I just, and it just seems to me that there needs to be some sort of a finality to that process, which I do not believe we have right now.
Other questions? Okay, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Kathy Eaton, Annette Nooningham, and Charles Stern. Ms. Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kathy Eaton. I'm the government coordinator for the League of Women Voters of Oregon. I'm here to state that the League is a staunch supporter of vote by mail, and we do oppose House Bill 2825. As a basic principle, the League believes that every citizen should be protected in the right to vote. We recognize that election procedures are a critical element in assuring that citizens are provided ease of ballot access and use. In amending current election procedures, House Bill 2825 violates both the voter's right to vote and the ballot access. In Section 111, line 22 on page 3, the county clerk is prohibited from allowing voters who are in line waiting to vote at 8 p.m. to cast their ballots. The same prohibition is repeated in Section 3, 7, line 40 on page 4. Given the inclination of Oregon voters to vote at the last minute and the lines which form at the county elections offices before 8 p.m., not allowing those in line at the deadline to vote is revoking their right to vote. No one can be added to the line once the polls have closed at 8 o'clock, but the current statutory protection for voters in line should not be repealed. Reducing the number of days for sending out the ballots does not improve the system. One of the advantages in the vote-by-mail system is the ability of voters to have time to read and assess the candidates and issues on the ballot. Requiring the ballots to be mailed just 10 days, or 11, before an election causes at least two serious problems. First, post offices are not able to process huge amounts of bulk mail in one day, and county elections offices would have to prepare to mail on a Saturday rather than over a 2 or 3 day regular work period as currently. And secondly, voters in many cases will have less than a week to review the ballot and must mail it in 3 or 4 days to ensure delivery by election day. The League is not opposed to shortening the time of sending out ballots. However, reducing the time must accommodate both the election offices and the voting public. Our suggestion would be to consider mailing between the 13th and 15th days. We are very much opposed to the statutory changes proposed in House Bill 2825, which limit voter access. In its present form, the League would urge the committee not to vote out HB 2825. Thank you.
Ms. Nooningham.
I did turn in detailed testimony, Annette Nooningham, on behalf of the Association of County Clerks. I'd like to just address the key issues on this. The concerns, one is the fiscal end of it. One part of it, it's twofold. One would be if it was Saturday, there are many offices that do not process bulk mail on a Saturday. Therefore, we would be required to send it out first-class mail. It'd be about $540,000 additionally for a statewide election. If it was moved to the 11th day, of course, that part would go away. The other portion of that is it does compress the amount of time that you're processing ballots because ballots would come back later, which would be about 75% of the ballots, if not higher, in the last 2 days of the election. Previously, we've been dealing with about 50% of the general election, and a little bit higher than that, the trend is. That's part of the fiscal end that it has been turned into the fiscal office. You may or may not yet have that. They did not include the part on the first class postage, however. The other issue is decreased convenience to voters. Ballots would be received less than 1 week prior to the election. giving them less time to vote their ballots and reduced options to return their voted ballots. As to voter participation, we are concerned about reduced voter participation because there would be voters not having the option to mail back their ballots because they may be needing to take more time, especially on a general election where they do historically wait for a full weekend to be able to vote their ballots, which would be past the time that they could mail their ballots back. And that would have a very possibly drastic effects on the elderly, people with disabilities, those that live in rural areas that have long distances from drop sites, and for those problematic ballots such as not signing their ballots. We do get quite a few that we're able to resolve prior to election, and if it was condensed, it's very likely there'd be many ballots we would not be able to count. There is concern for the campaigns that are doing this because they rely heavily upon the voted, not voted list that we provide to the campaigns. And there would, if they're condensed and returned back at the last few days, we're likely not to have reports that give them the information they need to be able to go out and try to contact the people that have not voted. And historically, voters at the polls, drop sites, and the county clerk's offices waiting in line to vote or to cast their ballots have been considered to have begun the act of actually voting. And that is historic with poll elections. We have always had a situation where we are required, all the clerk's office, to determine, and at the time we had polls, we would ask the poll workers to do this, that one person would have to go to the end of the line. We do that at our drop sites. We currently do that in front of our clerk's offices so that we know where the end of the line is and to let people continue to vote their ballots. And sometimes it's not due to their fault by any means. It just happens to be that we can try to anticipate the peak times and have the adequate staff to give them service on a prompt basis. But sometimes it's out of their control and it's out of our control. And then we would have to tell them that we're sorry, but we can't count your ballot. I think you would find that people would be quite unhappy to that. This bill overall would reduce voter participation and increase voter costs, and we are concerned and would really urge you to not support this bill. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Charles Stern. I'm the Yamhill County Clerk, and appreciate you considering some of the elements of this this bill. I appreciate the suggestion by a previous witness to, at a minimum, move it back to the 11th day. That has been a real significant factor in our considerations of costs and how to deal with it. And in conversations with the post office department in Portland, the mailing of vote mail on Saturday is a big issue. But moving back the 11th day still has some other factors in as when does the ballot reach the voter, and then how much time does the voter have. And Ms. Newingham has presented the fact that it's you are reducing with this bill the amount of time the voter could return it by mail. You're basically saying these ballots will have to come to a drop site in order to be received timely. This flexibility of poll closure that I had in my notes, I think Annette's done a good job of dealing with that. There is no flexibility. The polls close at 8 o'clock, and they're closed by having someone be at the end of that line, whether we were voting in a polling place and the line reached outside, whether we're having people in our office getting a replacement ballot because they spoiled theirs in some way, or are coming in to sign one that we called them and said, hey, you didn't sign it. These are all parts of the voting process that if they're there by 8 o'clock, even though they may not have completed it, we have allowed. Because it's under that same historic principle of they're in the process of voting. We have people go to our varying drop sites, and they're there at 8 o'clock. We tell them to be there at 7:45, so that we're certain they're there to be sure that there is nobody getting in line after the 8 o'clock deadline. There's no flexibility. It's rigid, 8 o'clock. But if you are in the process of voting, should we terminate that process? That's, I think, the policy question that's before you, is that if you're in a process of voting, You may be over there actually marking your ballot. Should you terminate that process at 8 o'clock and say, sorry, it's over? And that's your policy question there. One other factor that's a mechanical one is dealing with the undeliverable ballots. We mail ballots out, we get 4 or 5% back non-deliverable. People move. You got a bill before you, people die. There's various things happen that those ballots are not deliverable. They return to us, and then we process those, and many of those become inactive voters. Now, most of those, the bulk of those come back to us about a week after we mail. So you can start to see the mechanical process that I'm presenting to you. For elections in which a 50% turnout is critical, those inactive voters may decide whether or not you pass or fail. And so we need to be able to have those in our hands before 8 o'clock election night under current law and rule. And so that can be a factor also in having the abbreviated time frame. Be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Yes, Representative Mathlin.
Thank you, Representative. Charles or Annette, I guess, would be the ones to answer this. The end of the line issue.
Mm-hmm.
By anecdotal methods, I have understood that when people are waiting in line, 8 o'clock comes, and you have a person stationed out there at the end of the line, and then others come after that, there's a tremendous amount of pressure on the clerk's employee to excuse those who come after and let them in. And in fact, people in front of the person from the clerk's office, in other words, they're eligible to vote, they too join in and say, oh, no, let them vote. And so the point is, there's so much flexibility, at least I've heard anecdotally, that I'm wondering if the way you describe it is consistent and applied every time.
Mr. Chair, Representative Backlund, to my knowledge, it's consistently applied, and I would be very interested in knowing if that ever occurred from any of those anecdotal stories in my county, because we would be certainly addressing it. We have had people call us complaining that according to their watch, it wasn't 8 o'clock, and our people says it is. And so all of the calls I've had have been on the other side of the table of saying, I got cut off and my watch said, but... And so that we've actually do a little synchronization now with our people that go out saying, hey, we got to get together on this. And that's a difficult thing, is if you've got a city hall clock up there saying one time, and you have someone down there saying another, and of course they say, well, it's City Hall clock. Well, that clock hasn't changed in a week. See? So you got, it's a problem, and so that's why we take the effort of saying, hey, everybody that's going out, let's look what time it is. Where are your clocks? How is this working? And I would be most interested if you have any evidence from our county at all to address that.
I do not, from your county.
Okay.
Further discussion? Representative Barnhart. I'm sorry, Representative Backlund.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm on a roll here, so. I think I addressed this question to Cappy.
All right.
Your quote in your third paragraph, Cappy, given the inclination of Oregon voters to vote at the last minute and the lines which form at the county elections offices before 8 a.m., not allowing those in line at the deadline to vote is revoking their right to vote. I'm wondering if it's the system or if it's the individuals. Maybe our individuals should choose to come to vote before the 8 o'clock deadline. I'm an old teacher. Nah, I'm a veteran teacher. And I could assign a term paper on September the 7th, due on May the 16th. And guess when most of them would do the paper?
On the 15th.
Yes. So it's not the system. It's maybe the individuals who want to vote should change. And so I don't know that this bill revokes their right to vote. I don't think it does. Comments?
Mr. Chair, Representative Backlund. But in essence, it does. You're not going to change people's behavior, really. You can say,
if this bill went into effect that said to people, unless you are there and have turned your ballot in on the desk at 8 o'clock, you're not going to be allowed to vote. We're still going to have people who say, I'm there with my ballot and I'm in line and I should have the right to vote because I've been here at 8 by 8 o'clock. And I believe that if you repeal what is in current law, that you are revoking their right to vote. We may not agree on that, but if they have come to vote, their intent is to vote.
They come before 8.
Well, and yes, and yeah. You're right. They've come before 8. They have to be there before 8 in order to be in line by 8 o'clock. They aren't coming at 8 o'clock. They've been in line before that. They've evidenced an intent to cast a ballot because they're there before 8 o'clock. Mm-hmm. So if you say to them, tough, you haven't reached the door, and it's 8 o'clock, therefore you can't vote, we think that does impinge on their right to vote.
Chair, follow up. I understand what you're saying, Kathy. I would also say, though, that people's behavior can change. If you're driving home to Data Corvallis, and you're going a certain speed, and you see a state trooper parked out alongside the street, you will slow down. Your behavior will change. If voters know that they need to be there so that there's no question, they will change their voting behavior. And as I say, we could send out the ballots 45 days, 145 days before the due date, before the 8 o'clock deadline on the day of the election, and many would still choose to come late. I don't think that's the fault of the system. I think it's the individuals who need to recognize that and therefore adjust their behavior or their attitudes in terms of how they vote or when they vote. I don't know, and you may be right. I would not bet my house on my position and against yours. But it seems to me that when you vote, it's so sacred and so important, we need to have very, not rigid, but very distinct, well-known, no questions asked type of rule here, voting procedure.
Okay. Representative Barnhart.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I arrived at a drop box location at 7:59. Nobody else is there. I dropped my ballot in the box before 8 o'clock. Well, your poll watcher is there and is about to pick up the box.
Right.
And does, 30 seconds after I vote. I arrive at a drop box and there's a line of 50 people. Slowly, you know, 1 second or so, putting their ballots in the box. And I get there at 7:59, and at 8 o'clock and 30 seconds, it's my turn to drop my ballot in the box. I got there before 8 o'clock. Now, the difference between those two scenarios is not my behavior. It's other things that I didn't control. Who was ahead of me in line, how many drop boxes there were, and things of that sort. I think if we change this rule, this will be, we will regret it desperately when the newspapers come out on the day after election with huge complaints about this. This has been a rule that's been standing in Oregon for decades, maybe over a century, I don't know, but a long time, that if you're in the process of voting at 8 o'clock on election night, you get to finish the process of voting and cast your ballot. I can tell you at least all the anecdotal information I have from the county I'm familiar with, and that is very rigid about making sure that you're in the process of voting by 8 o'clock or you're not allowed to vote. If there's a problem with enforcement, we should make sure that we have taken care of enforcement, because it is very clear to me, and I know to everyone else on the committee, that 8 o'clock means 8 o'clock, not some other time. That's one of my concerns. The other concern I have, and it's a very serious one, is that people be allowed the time to study the ballot and to cast their votes. And the most important point that I heard from the testimony so far was the fact that many people need a weekend in order to consider a long ballot and to process it. If the ballot arrives for them the week before Election Day, they don't get that weekend before they have to, in time to mail the ballot, they would then have to take it in themselves, thus increasing the congestion and increasing the likelihood that Barnhart arrives at the polling place at 7:59 with a line of 100 people in front of him. I have serious problems with this bill on both of the major particulars about it, and this may be out of line at this point, but I don't plan to support it.
And we are still in public hearing. Some additional testimony coming, too, I'm sure. But just to represent Barnhart's first question as far as delivering a ballot, the way that the proposed language is set up for the clerks, I mean, I'm assuming you would be drafting rules on what it means to, say, a ballot that has been delivered to or received by the clerk and things like that. I mean, that's... You're having to make definitions of that, wouldn't you?
My understanding in reading this bill is that if somebody had not cast their ballot and was standing in line, even though they arrived half hour earlier, we would not be able to count their ballot. That is the way I read this bill.
Right. And I guess my question still, it remains, would you not have to, in some kind of an interpretation of this change in law, on the term saying ballots that have not been delivered to or received by the county clerk. Wouldn't you have to say what delivery means? What,
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there may be some area for rule on this, but I think that you how much can you move from the plain language of the bill to the rule to make it broader? To me, that makes a fuzzier law than we have today. Is that if the ballot isn't in the box, the way I read this bill, if the ballot isn't in the box or been delivered to us by the post office, that ballot will not be counted. Can you, by rule, liberalize that to the point that said, well, if we had issued somebody a replacement ballot and they're over here in the process of voting it, that would still be countable? The plain reading of the bill, I would say no. But again, that's a policy decision I think this committee is dealing with and would have to say, is there room enough in there for the Secretary of State by rule to say, yeah, that would be countable. The flip side of that is every ballot we ever issued is a ballot issued. And so this says ballot received as those are coming back. So at the plain reading, I would say the answer is no, but I'm open to your policy direction.
Hey, Representative Berger, did you have something?
I just wanted to make a comment. I'd like to compare, Mr. Chairman, the comment by my good representative here next to me about the term paper assignment and the ballots. The student is not so excited about doing the term paper. The person who votes and comes on election day may not like mail-in. I have friends and family who vote on election day, the last day, because they don't like mail-in and they take their ballot to the library and drop it in on election day. It's a traditional. And so I think that you're seeing a lot of people in Oregon doing that, and they're voting at the very last because they like voting on what they consider election day. So.
Okay, Representative Close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to ask Mr. Stern, back in the days of poll elections, when you had a school open and people coming into the school, how did you handle the 8 o'clock deadline? Do you lock the door and the people that are in there are in? How did you do that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Close, that depended on the physical location of the building. We had some small schools, Hopewell, if anybody knows where Hopewell is at, small schools where there wasn't the ability to put everybody in the building. And so election board person would go out and stand in the line, same as we would do today. In fact, that's where the whole process came from. If you had some, even within, where you had them all within the building, Newberg Edwards School, in Representative Backman's district, they were all in the school, but you had other people besides school people there. You still had to put somebody in the line because you had, you know, everybody else that might be there for school, business, or other reasons. And so we've always had to address, in Yamhill County, placing somebody in line. There may have been some places where they could just walk a door and be done with it, but we've never had that opportunity.
Quick follow-up, Mr.
Sure,
Chair.
Follow-up.
So the person in line then becomes the last person. That's your cutoff. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Close. That is true. The election board worker in line was there to ensure no one else joined the line and to inform someone who did come saying, we're sorry, but this is the end of the line. It's past 8 o'clock, and you're just too late.
Could that be done with the mail ballot as well, with people coming to the courthouse?
Mr. Chair, Representative Close, that is exactly what we do now.
Okay.
Both at the drop sites where you're driving by, we have people there who do that, a member of each party that stand there to see that occurs, and then within the courthouse itself and the clerk's office, we do that there too.
Thank you.
Yeah. Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With regard to the reference to anecdotal occurrences, Ms. Newingham, I don't think you had an opportunity to comment, but I would ask you the question in this way. Have you had complaints about perhaps the manipulation of any line that is in place at the 8 o'clock closing hour?
Mr. Chair, Representative Flores, we certainly, last presidential election, there was some differences of opinions on both sides, and we had party members from both sides that were looking at the lines, and they would say that somebody was or wasn't, you know, trying to get in the line. But I do want to tell you that it was anecdotal, because we had about 2 to 3 people that were observing it that were my staff. In fact, the director of our department was out front with them, as well as we had a deputy sheriff out front, and they did not report any problems and were watching the lines. We actually do take extra steps at all of our larger elections, and we've even had some deputy sheriffs at some of, like, their Pearl Street drop site, which is a drive-by one. We usually always have a minimum of 2 people at all of our drop locations and are in front of our office, so that it's not hearsay, that we have witnesses to what is occurring, so that it's not one individual that might favor anybody, let them in the line, as might have been implied. And those are really important, and it's a protection issue for my staff and for anybody else who is responsible for watching those. We take it quite seriously and feel that it's really important that all people are treated equally, no matter who they are, and that 8 o'clock is 8 o'clock. If they're in line, they should be able to vote, and if they're not, they're too late. And we have shut the door on people after 8 o'clock that have tried to come in, and we've said, no, we're sorry, we'll take your ballot, but we're not counting it. So we do tell them no when it's too late.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to follow up on Representative Close's question about what you did back in the days when people came to the polling place and marked their ballots there. How late, I mean, on a busy election night, how late could some of those polls, in effect, be open with the voters that you've sequestered there who haven't had a chance to vote yet? How late could that go?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, now you're trying to tax my memory.
Yeah.
That would vary. And as much as we like to think candidates are the big draw to an election, it's the measures. Mm. And I can remember measures that were big draws, sales tax, Trojan, various ones that really brought the crowd out. And I believe we had some polling places where we were continuing to issue ballots that were probably 8:30, where people were lined up, and we were continuing to issue ballots and continue to mark ballots half an hour after the polls had closed.
Of people who were in line before.
Yes, they were in line before that.
And then a follow-up, if I may. How late, nowadays, with the mail ballot, how late do we tend to run? I mean, is it like that, or is it something different?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, I can only speak to Yamhill County. In Yamhill County, the only place there was anybody waiting to be processed at 8 o'clock was in the clerk's office itself, and those were people who had their ballots issued, and they were marking them on the various voting booths that exist in the office, and that was my recollection of the last general election. But some other counties may have other experiences.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, could I share an anecdote?
Certainly.
I supervised elections in Bosnia in 1997 and in 2000, and we let everybody vote who was waiting at 7 o'clock when the polls closed. So this is not just in our country, but it is being observed in those countries that are beginning to become democracies.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Harvey Matthews, still here? And Mark Nelson. Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mark Nelson, Public Affairs Counsel, here today just representing Public Affairs Counsel. Harvey Matthews had to leave for another hearing, and he may come back before I return. As some of you know, the Public Affairs Council is also manages statewide ballot measure campaigns as well as regional measures. Over 20 years, we've managed 30 statewide or regional ballot measure campaigns in the state, and so we have seen firsthand the difference between the vote by mail and voting at the traditional polling booth. And quite honestly, the difference is, as you might imagine, it's voting on one day or voting on each subsequent day in an 18 to 20 day period of time. It's all about when you vote. And the as you might expect, this has had a dramatic impact on the cost of campaigns. And all of us, including the previous witnesses, have railed about the cost of campaigns in this state, and I'll say nothing. Nothing in this state has raised the cost of campaigns, not political action committees, not parties or soft money or anything else. Nothing has raised the cost of campaigns in this state more than vote by mail. That doesn't mean I have my own personal feelings about vote by mail. We have that system, but it has had a dramatic impact in terms of the cost of campaigns. Let me show you how it works, or tell you how it works as it relates to a statewide ballot measure campaign. Now, typically in a ballot measure campaign, and it varies depending upon how much money you have and various strategies and what the issue is, but typically in a polling booth, a November Tuesday election, everyone's going to the polling booth. We would start our campaign approximately 4 weeks out. A statewide basis, we'd have our radio run, we'd have our television run, we'd layer in our direct mail, and typically it would be 4 weeks out, all building to that one day. And when you bring in vote by mail, you're now starting to vote about 3 weeks out from the election. So your first voting day is 3 weeks out from election. So what happens if you have a typical, take your four-week campaign that ran to the Tuesday? Now you got to take that four-week campaign and you start 7 weeks out, because your first election day is 3 weeks out. So you got to hit your first voter 3 weeks out, so you've got to back up those 4 weeks. And that's typically what you do on a statewide ballot measure campaign, because you know, and I'll talk to you about numbers about turnout and when people vote and how that pattern has changed a little bit over the length or the history of vote by mail. But you have no other choice. If you're going to deliver that message, and it's in television, it's you have points that you need to build up in terms of delivery. And you have the same thing in radio. You have to be able to deliver your messages X amount of times to have an impact on the voter. So you're starting 7 weeks out, and as each day you're delivering the message at the same cost per day, whether it's electronic or direct mail, the same cost per day, every day, all the way into an ever-diminishing number of voters. So your cost per voter that you're reaching is going up astronomically as you approach the election day. So the cost of campaigns, we estimate between 55 and 60% increase in the cost of statewide ballot measure campaigns as a result of this provision. Again, you know, you just think, you cannot let that voter vote without delivering your messages and delivering it enough times that you're having an impact as you normally would have as you build toward a single election day. And because now we have 18 election days. So your effectiveness of your delivery and your money, of course, is dramatically reduced as it increases, because you're trying to spread it out over a longer period of time. And there's some discussion as to what drives people to vote. What drives people to vote, in my mind, is finality. Finality, whether it is a polling booth day or it's the last day of 18 days that you have to vote. Whether you start that 18 days out or 3 weeks out like we have now, or you start at 10 days, or you start at 50 days. It's all about finality. If you start 50 days, it'll just dribble in as it is dribbling out. As you get closer and closer, the turnout is going to go up. Let me talk about the turnout. And all of you, it's the Secretary of State has done a wonderful job over the years in developing a system in terms of how they track how the vote comes in. And it's sheets like this that show you the percentage of returns. I think most of you have seen those. Taking a look at the last four elections, general and primary elections, you begin to see a pattern. In the first 7 days, and I include the first 7 days, including the mail time, which is 2 or 3 days before you actually get your first ballot back, typically in those first 7 days, you're getting about 14% of the return coming back in. We've had 14 in the general of 02, 14 in the primary of 02, 13% in the general of 00 or 2000, and 17% in the primary. It's really the last 11 days, and I didn't pick those 11 days knowing about the amendment moving from 10 to 11. It's just how it happens and how it breaks, and particularly those last 4 days. Used to be that you'd have a bubble at the beginning, it dropped back down in the center, and then a big pop-up at the end. But what it has moved more toward is really a pop-up, a pretty strong push in the last 11 days, much stronger in the last four of the 11 days. But in the middle 7 days, you have about 32% of your vote that's coming in. 30 in the general, 2002, 28% in the primary, 33% in the general of 2000, and 34 in the primary. Finally, in your last 4 days is when you get your real bump. And it used to be actually higher than this, but it depends if you're just looking at your percent of those who voted or percent of all those eligible to vote. But that's running around between 28 and 30%, but in 4 days. So a big bump in those last 4 days. So as it relates to whether it's 18 days, whether it's 10 days, I think the bulk of those people are voting in those last 10 or 11 days. But my primary argument for this is to help reduce the cost of campaigns. If you're reducing it even, in this case, 8 to 10 days, you are reducing the cost of campaigns, period, whether you're a candidate or whether you're a ballot measure. There's no other way to look at it because you have to deliver those messages in a timely manner and in the same frequency in order to have impact as you once did when it was a polling booth election. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Ron Sanderson.
Thank you. Mr. Nelson, my goal would be to have as many voters vote as possible. And I would hate to see something like this happen just to reduce the cost of campaigns. We have the greatest number, our state has one of the highest voter turnouts of any state in the nation. And I think that's due to the fact that we have vote by mail. And it could be, I don't know, but it could be the fact that it starts before the 7 weeks, like you said, the campaigning starts, because of the educational process in getting the voter more educated and aware of what is really going on. So I sort of take your stats and look at it a little bit differently. True, I think campaigns are, costs are so high, but I would hate to see limit the number of voters, you know, to decrease the cost of campaigns.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Willis Anderson, I don't believe that this will reduce turnout. I think that we had high turnouts prior to vote by mail. I think one of the driving factors, of course, is what's on the ballot. We've had ballots, vote by mail, in which there wasn't anything particularly interesting, and the turnout was lower. So I think a lot of it has to do with what's on the ballot. I believe that finality of a date, whether it's 18 days or 11 days, you will still have a turnout. It's just in a more compressed period of time. I would not like to see a lowering of the turnout. I don't think that would happen under this situation. And I think you get the benefit of lowering cost of elections.
Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. With your experience and statistical background, do you, Representative Monis Anderson just indicated that she was under the impression that because of vote by mail, the turnout has been significantly higher here in Oregon. Do you know what the comparison is between what our voter turnout would compare to what it was when we may have been just an election day state? Or would that depend on the issue, what's on the ballot? And then also in regard to other states that are not vote by mail.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Forrest, I don't have that data in front of me per se. I believe, again, it has a lot to do with what's on the election. I believe we've done better, especially in special elections or school elections, with vote by mail than what we were doing with a walk-in. I think the numbers will show that. But those numbers have also started coming down. I've also always maintained that at some point, that ballot becomes another piece of mail on the kitchen counter. And that's what I've always worried about vote by mail. I don't think that has occurred yet, and maybe it will not occur. As it relates to other states, I think Oregon has always and continues to be one of the highest turnout in the country. Whether we've been able to stay up there because of vote by mail, I think there's an argument there.
Further questions? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. This one I hadn't thought to ask anybody else, and I don't know whether you know the answer to it, but I'm assuming that this schedule that we're talking about in this bill would apply to all elections, whether it's a school special election or a general election. Is that your
understanding? Representative Barnhart, yes, that's my understanding.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Any further? Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Troy Nichols.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Troy Nichols, and I'm here to testify today in support of House Bill 2825. Currently, I serve as Chief of Staff to House Majority Leader Tim Knope, but I guess I'm more here in my role as Executive Director of Majority 2002, which is the House Republican Caucus PAC. Mr. Nelson did a good job of making several of the points which I intended to make. However, I think there are a few distinctions. The idea of shrinking the window between the mailing of the ballots and election day has been something that I worked on last session within House Majority Leader Karen Minnis. And given the experience that I went through personally, and of course all of you did last election cycle, I'm even a stronger believer now in shortening this window. I think you hear a lot of talk in the building and a lot of proposals about campaign finance reform. And most of it, however, deals with limiting an individual or an organization's ability to contribute to a campaign. And while I believe that many of these efforts are noble, I think the focus needs to be in a different direction. And we need to focus on the cost of campaigns and reducing this almost insatiable need for more and more money to keep your candidate's message in front of the voters for this long, sustained period of time. In my opinion, the current vote-by-mail system exacerbates this need. Currently, as you well know, ballots can be mailed 18 days prior to an election, and this requires candidates, particularly for legislative races, to build and maintain momentum heading into Election Day for almost a month. And as many of you know, this can be incredibly expensive. You're seeing a single candidate for a targeted or a swing House district can spend as much $200,000, as much as $350,000. And if you add into the, if you factor in a contested primary, you could reach $500,000 for a job that pays roughly $20,000 a year. Candidates, House candidates in targeted races today are forced to develop campaign plans that could involve up to 24 pieces of mail, a multitude of radio spots, and even campaign television ads on network TV. I believe that reducing this window from 18 to 11 days, I believe with the Dash 3 amendments, if I'm correct, would go a long ways towards controlling this escalating cost. Somebody who has some knowledge about the need for sustaining your message in a campaign for this length of time, I can honestly say that House Bill 2825 is the most effective form of campaign finance reform we can enact this session. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Close.
He mentioned a Dash 3. I've got a Dash 2.
It's just a Dash 2.
Dash 2. Okay. I apologize for that.
Okay. I'm going to just recess the public hearing for a few minutes and recess the committee.
reconsidering the closed hearing.
Go ahead and open up the House Committee on Rules and Public Affairs again, and we will reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2825. Mr. Anderson, come forward.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. Again, for the record, Bruce Anderson with the House Speaker's Office.
Okay, now, do you have something in your file that has now been
distributed? Well, I did. Representative Berger, I think, was brought up the issue, and it's funny that you did because we were talking about, a little while ago, we were talking about, in preparation for this issue, or this bill, talking about this the bill, and there's this issue that comes up if you got a marked ballot. And I actually just thought, well, that's not going to be an issue. So we weren't going to put forward the amendment today, but to alleviate concerns, I would offer up the dash one amendment to the bill, which should deal with the issue of if a person has a marked ballot and they're standing in line and they've made it by the 8 p.m. deadline.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Moss Anderson.
But it says only at the county clerk's office, so other drop boxes located elsewhere, it wouldn't be.
Mr. Chair, Representative Moss Anderson.
A site designated.
I'm not sure if that's a site. That's the the language.
I think it does.
Comma a site doesn't.
Yeah. They're talking two separate.
Comma or any location described in probably.
Right.
Yeah.
And gotcha. The issue was if you've got a marked ballot and you come to the drop-off site or the county clerk's office and you get held up at the door or whatever to alleviate or to address that issue. So. Then my understanding is that would address that issue.
Okay. So, any questions?
Yes, I just want that clarified then, that this then would keep things exactly the same as they are.
Yeah. Oh, just with respect, if you had a marked ballot and you were merely dropping it off, you've made it to the county clerk's office by the deadline, and that you would not be turned away at that point if you've made the 8 p.m. deadline.
Okay.
And that's my understanding from legislative counsel in drafting the measure and drafting the dash one amendments.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Okay. Tony, we'll go ahead and.
Chair?
Yes, Representative Hartman.
They're still in the room, and I would like to, I'd very much like to hear from Ms. Eaton and the two county clerks about their view about this measure and how it's similar or different from the current law, mm-hmm. If that's allowed.
Sure. You can come forward to discuss this amendment, dash one amendment.
And of course, they haven't seen it any longer than the rest of us have.
Right. That's part of the issue.
That satisfies me.
Okay, Chair and members of the committee. There is currently the statute in that addresses, which you were not changing, and that address that people who were in line and waiting to vote a ballot would consider to change the act of voting. That one was one that was not really in the bill itself, which would have been an issue had you continued with the way the bill was. It was a little confusing to me, and I have not had a chance to look at it in depth. But when it refers back to this two other subsections, those deal with the voting compartments. And we are required at the, like we put out so many voting compartments at our official drop sites that people can vote at. But majority of people don't use those. So it doesn't then address just the person who drives up to drive and cast their ballot. And then it raises kind of the issue to me, it bothers me a little bit on the marked ballot because we don't look at their ballot. They're enclosed, and we don't know if they're marked or not. There's a privacy issue that would concern me to some extent. So I certainly would want to look at this a little bit more carefully to see if there would be some conflict.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Flores.
Thank you, Ms. Nunez. But in regard to that last statement, if a person is tendering to you an envelope, the assumption would be they're tendering it to you to deliver their vote. Whether or not it's marked or not, that would have been their decision, but they're tendering you a ballot that is in a manner prepared to deposit as if they were delivering their voted ballot. Would that not be correct?
Yes, Representative Flores, yes. I would assume that there was a voted ballot there. You could have someone who was standing in line because they made a mistake on their ballot and needed a replacement ballot in order to cast it correctly. And any voter is entitled, as long as they haven't yet cast their ballot, to request a replacement to revote their ballot, as long as it wasn't already cast. That wouldn't apply in this case, so that person would not have an opportunity to do that. So there still are some holes, as I would see it.
Okay. Other questions? Representative Berger.
It's not a question. I think it's a comment. I'm not sure I agree with you on that. I think that if a person has a sealed ballot and hands it to you, it is your presumption that this ballot is as it should be. It is not your responsibility to be sure that I fill out my ballot right or that I sign the back envelope. But all this says is that you will accept it.
Chair Doyle and Representative Berger, I did not mean that. If it's sealed and they're turning it into me, I would agree with you completely, and that isn't what I meant. I just meant that there's other people that are waiting in line to take care of some other business dealing with voting ballots, that they're not complete. They need our help to complete that process because maybe they made a mistake and realized it at home, and then they're coming for another ballot.
And this this is all at 8 o'clock that they would come in to do that.
Prior to 8.
And then you would then take whatever time they needed after 8 p.m. to let them redo their ballot.
Mr. Chair, I was going to expand on that. As we have people walk in, it's not in the envelope, we screwed up. We changed our mind, or we made a mistake, or we did something. And so we'd like a fresh ballot so we can vote on it. That is, I think, the question that Ms. Newingham has raised is whether or not we could give them then that replacement ballot, which is now in the law. A replacement ballot, the original ballot that they've spoiled is destroyed, and then they give them an opportunity to remark that ballot and deposit it. I don't know that this provides for that or not, and I think that's a question for clarification. I don't know if a marked ballot is providing the necessary control you're looking for if just waiting to deposit a ballot is adequate control. I think there's some ways maybe to look at that. But I think that still has to address what about if you've been in line since 8 o'clock and now you get there and you want to make a correction or resolve some of the issues, or we may have called you and said you need to come in because you didn't sign it. And we call people and say you didn't sign your ballot, and so they come in, they get into the line, and then we process them as we are able to. And so I think those are some of the questions.
Ms. Eaton, do you have any comments?
Well, I'm really trying to figure out why we're actually changing what is on page 4, line 38. When the polls close, electors who are at the polling place waiting to vote shall be considered to have begun the act of voting. That's what the current law says. And I'm just not sure that whatever we're attempting to do here is any more clear than that is, that if you're at the polling place at 8 o'clock, you're allowed to vote.
Thank you. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. I have a hypothetical, which in fact, I guess it's not hypothetical, actually happened. My daughter started voting when she was 18. She's well over 20 now, and her handwriting has changed quite a bit. after having gone to college and taking notes and such. He got a card from Annette Nottingham saying, well, we think somebody else signed your ballot. Well, that isn't true. Nobody else had signed her ballot, but her signature had changed. She had to go back down and prove to them that she was who she was and that her signature had, in fact, changed. Now, under the current rule, she could arrive at 7:59 and complete that business by 8:15, and her ballot would count, if I understand the current rule.
Representative Doyle, Representative Barnhart, actually it's a little bit different for those circumstances. We would challenge the ballot and send a letter out, even if it was on election day, and allow the person 10 days to try to resolve the issue and to prove that who they were. And there would still be an allowance for those particular circumstances because it would fall under a challenge process.
So you have another 10 days.
Yes.
This bill doesn't affect that situation.
No, I do not believe it affects that situation.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. We'll now close the public hearing.
Mr. Chair?
Oh, sorry. Representative Backlund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. By the way, I would congratulate you on that, based on your answer to Representative Barnhart and his daughter. I think that's excellent, so I would compliment you on for that. And I'm sure any other county clerk would have done the same, and I could compliment them in absentia, perhaps. But the issue of a soiled ballot, a mistake has been made, and the person is in line, and 8 o'clock comes and goes. There's only one line. That person, because he or she is trying to correct a previous mistake, could not go directly inside and get the replacement ballot.
And if I can direct you to contain your answer to the -1 amendment, please. Okay. In response to that.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Backlund, the question is basically how you process this activity under the -1 or any other process. Again, that's going to vary from county to county on their staffing, space. There's so many other factors for me to answer. Statewide, it's very difficult. In our office, we will have 3 people servicing the customers for whatever reason they're there for, and we just take them as fast as we can take them as they're there, beginning 7 o'clock in the morning. I mean, it's not just 7 o'clock at night. We start at 7 in the morning, and we continue to process them as rapid as we can so they can go on about their business. And so what I read in your question is that should you have a separate distinct line for corrections versus any other type of election activity, I think that would depend on space, staffing.
Or the person standing in line, excuse me, Mr. Chair, follow up. The person standing in line, that one person we've indicated earlier, could periodically announce that anyone here who needs a soil ballot replaced go on into to the desk. I'm thinking, you know, you would think all kinds of lines, airplane lines, all kinds of places, and there's announcements all the time. People can move over here. I'm checking out at the grocery store. We've opened up a checkout. We'll move over here. If they did that, if that person you designated to do that did that periodically, I would think that you wouldn't need us 2 separate lines. You could just move those people on in, and you would avoid this difficulty of the 8 o'clock deadline.
Mr. Chair, Representative Backlund, that may be, but that still doesn't address if you're in whatever line you're in at 8 o'clock. I don't think that addresses that, and I think Ms. Nottingham would like to.
Thank you. What I wanted to add to that is that during the presidential election in Lane County, we had so many people that we had to take it was so deep that there was no way, there wasn't enough staff that could have been at the front counter to have taken care of all those people by 8 o'clock. We were extremely busy, and I would expect that the next presidential election will be the same.
Excuse me.
Follow up.
I was thinking, Annette, the people who would be there with the soiled ballot would be there before 8 o'clock. They would go on in. They may not finish getting a new ballot until 8:10 or 8:15. They would still be permitted to vote because they had already, in effect, voted, but incorrectly. They made a mistake.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Okay, we'll now close the public hearing on House Bill 2825. We'll open up a work session on House Bill 2825. Representative Flores?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move the adoption of the Dash 1 amendments.
Representative Flores moves adoption of the Dash 1 amendments. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I'm on a roll here today. I'm sorry about that. Dash 1, line 7. And is waiting to deposit a marked ballot. There was a reference that I wonder if this might solve. And is waiting to deposit a marked, comma, sealed ballot. That important?
Well, it's it would provide further clarification, and
it would help the county clerk to know that the ballot truly was completed because it had been sealed and clearly marked.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Close.
I guess my concern would be that then you put a mandate. It sounds to me then there'd be a mandate on the clerk to determine whether it's sealed or not. It seems a little cumbersome.
I guess as I took this issue, and it's just my own opinion, is that all this is doing is making sure that, you know, we are distinguishing those who are actually in line to deposit a ballot that they have completed versus those who are standing in line, and then they start marking their ballot. So, and they're marking the ballot basically after 8 o'clock. So.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. Yes.
Okay, other discussion? Seeing none, any objection to the Dash 1s? Not so ordered. What's there for us?
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2825.
And for us has moved adoption of the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2825. Any discussion? This brings it to the 11th day instead of the 10th day. Alleviates the clerk's concerns. Okay. No objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Flores.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2825 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation.
Representative Flores has moved House Bill 2825 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation. Any discussion? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to point out the way that the current law works on this piece that we seem to have spent most of our discussion about. I refer you to the last page of the bill, the 38 and 39 at the end. When the polls close, elect be sure at the polling place waiting to vote shall be considered to have begun the act of voting. So at that point, we have a definition of begun the act of voting. And now I refer you back to line to page 3, line 19 through 21, in which it says at 8 p.m. on election day, electors who are at the county clerk's office, a site designated under section 2 of this subsection through this section, or any location described in and refers to the Oregon Revised Statutes, and who are in line waiting to vote or to deposit a voted ballot shall be considered to have begun the act of voting. This is extremely clear. The current language is very clear. Everyone knows what their responsibilities are and what their rights are. If you're there and you're ready to vote, or you're there ready to drop your ballot in the box, and it's before 8 o'clock, you get to vote. And it's extremely clear. Now, with the amendments that we've got in front of us, it's kind of a mishmash, and it would be very difficult to figure out exactly what this amendment means. What this amendment actually says is that the clerk is going to accept the ballot from an elector who is at 8 o'clock on election day, is at the county clerk's office. That's okay. At a site designated under subsection 2, that's the Dropbox site of the section, or any location described in ORS 254.472 or 4. And now those sites, referring to the statute book, refer to at least three suitable compartments, shelves, or tables at which electors may mark their ballots. That's 472, and 474 describes voting booths. A county with 35,000 or more electors, the county clerk shall maintain a number of voting booths equal to at least one voting booth for every 20,000 electors in the county, and so forth. And I'm not going to read all the details, but you get the point. So at this point, we've got a rule that says if you're at the county clerk's office, you're at a designated, if you're in a drop box, or if you're at the table or compartment, or at the voting booth, and you've got a marked ballot to deposit. At least a couple of these subsections don't make sense when you stick in that last requirement. It does make it very clear, I think, if you take all of these sections seriously, that someone who's actually in the compartment or at the voting booth marking a ballot at 8 o'clock will not be allowed to vote because the ballot isn't marked, isn't ready to deposit at 8 o'clock. So that's a significant change from the current law. It will cause confusion. It will lead to the same kinds of problems that I was concerned about in the discussion earlier. The amendment doesn't cure the problem that we originally dealt with. I'd feel a whole lot more comfortable if the original language on page 3, lines 19 through 21, and the original language on page 4, lines 38 and 39, were still in the bill rather than being taken out. Because they're very clear. Everyone in the state understands how this works. And we all understand that if we're in line ready to vote, we're in line with our spoiled ballot, we're in line with our marked ballot, doesn't matter. We're there before 8 o'clock, we get to vote. That's the current rule. Second issue, the great concern to me, is shortening the length of the time that people have to vote because of when the ballots are mailed. I understand and I commiserate with Mr. Nelson about the cost of elections. My problem with elections isn't their cost. My problem with elections is the relative ignorance of Oregon voters about the general issues of government, our budget, the way state government operates, how our agencies function or don't function. Oregonians listen to the people who say a number of things that are misleading about the way our system functions on a regular basis. And I get emails on a regular basis indicating that people simply don't understand what we do. The fact that we have longer election times than in other places, and that it costs more to get your point out, in my opinion, is maybe it's a good thing rather than a bad thing. Not so good that we have to spend more money, but it's good that more people become more informed. So, in that sense, shortening the election cycle is not a good idea. Second point, and I think probably a very important one, is that many people, in my district at least, do actually sit down over the weekend, mark their ballots, and put them in the mail. Now, the weekend in which that occurs is not the weekend before the polls close, but the weekend before that, a few days after they've received their ballot under the current rule. If we go to an 11-day before rule, the ballot will be mailed on the Friday before the second weekend before voting closes. Most people will not receive their ballot until Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday of the next week. If they wait to mark their ballots until the next weekend, they really have no choice at that point except to go to one of the drop boxes or to take their ballot to the clerk's office. And of course, that part of what vote by mail was intended to do was to allow people the convenience of being able to vote by mail. I think this significantly restricts that, and so I'm opposed to the measure.
Any further discussion? Seeing none? No. Okay, let's call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
Jose Barnhart.
No.
Jose Close.
Close aye.
Jose Flores.
Aye.
Jose Mona Anderson.
No.
Berger.
No.
Chair Doyle.
Chair votes aye. And House Bill 2418 2825 is moved to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation, and we will have Representative Becklin carry this bill. And that closes the work session on House Bill 2825, and that also ends our discussion today, and the Rules Committee is adjourned.